A basement cafe in Paris, December 1895. 50 seconds of flickering images, women in motion, sparked such chaos that police had to control the crowds. Yet the Lumiere brothers, the visionaries behind this sensation, abandoned filmmaking within 5 years, declaring cinema had no future. Fast forward to 2007, Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer laughs off the iPhone, insisting it has no chance of gaining significant market share. These aren't isolated blunders. They're symptoms of a deeper truth. We're living through an age where change moves so fast that even brilliant minds can't keep pace. The world is experiencing centuries of progress compressed into decades, and the old rules for navigating it have become dangerously obsolete. What worked yesterday won't work tomorrow, and what seems impossible today might be mundane by next week. For most of human history, power was balanced. Governments checked governments. Corporations competed with equally sized rivals. Capital pushed against labor. Then, almost overnight, this symmetry shattered. A single unemployed trader with a clever algorithm erased nearly $1 trillion from the U.S. securities market in 2010. Craig Newmark, working essentially alone, devastated the newspaper industry with Craigslist. Terrorist cells challenge superpowers. Individual hackers breach government fortresses. The equation has fundamentally changed. Small players now create impacts wildly disproportionate to their size, while the biggest threats to established systems come from the smallest actors, startups, rogues, indie labs. This isn't just about technology disrupting business. It's about complexity itself reaching unprecedented levels. Think of the economy. Billions of people making simple decisions, buy, sell, hold, that somehow self-organize into market behaviors no single person could orchestrate. Or consider your immune system, ant colonies, Earth's climate, all complex systems that have existed for eons. But we've recently cranked the volume to 11 on every input that drives complexity: heterogeneity, networks, interdependency, adaptation. The result? A world so interconnected and volatile that even experts consistently fail to predict what happens next. For centuries, knowledge flowed downward, from God to priests, kings to subjects, professors to students. Authority decided truth. Now, intelligence arises from countless simple interactions. Ant colonies exhibit intelligence beyond any individual ant. Your consciousness emerges from billions of non-conscious neurons. Cities, languages, markets all demonstrate properties transcending their components. When Fukushima's nuclear disaster struck in 2011, volunteers formed Safecast, built Geiger counters with Tokyo hackers, and deployed citizen scientists across Japan. Their 50 million data points revealed radiation levels varied dramatically across short distances, something government helicopter flyovers missed entirely. Self-organizing communities outperformed centralized agencies through distributed intelligence. Wikipedia demonstrates this principle. When Team Betancourt tackled drug-resistant tuberculosis, 9 European countries contributed: students with professors, citizen scientists with professional researchers. They reprogrammed bacteriophage viruses to target TB's genetic mutations, a breakthrough emerging from radical collaboration, not isolated genius. The network era demands pull over push. Rather than stockpiling resources and pushing them according to plan, pull means drawing precisely what you need from vast networks. When Safecast needed Geiger counters, they pulled expertise from Tokyo hackerspace, design help from global engineers, and Kickstarter funding. Organizations clinging to stockpiled resources discover these assets have become liabilities, limiting the agility survival now demands. Maps become obsolete in a rapidly changing world. Compasses remain useful. They provide direction without dictating the path, allowing for detours and creative problem solving. This isn't aimless wandering. It's understanding that the route to your goal probably won't be straight. America spends more on education than most countries, yet consistently underperforms internationally. When a student asked her KIPP teacher why she needed algebra for fashion design, the answer revealed something crucial. Algebra teaches abstract thinking, bridging idealized concepts and practical application. Enter Scratch, a programming language designed for kids that looks nothing like traditional code. Instead of cryptic symbols, it offers colorful blocks that snap together like Lego bricks. Mitch Resnick created Scratch after hearing Seymour Papert speak about computers as tools for creative expression, adding social elements that transformed programming from solitary puzzle solving into collaborative creation. The MIT Media Lab itself defies mapping. When business students tried charting its organizational structure, they gave up. The lab shares a compass heading: uniqueness, impact, and magic. This shared direction allows the lab to dance between disciplines, making discoveries mapmakers would never chart. Quest to Learn, a New York City public school, teaches every subject through video games. Students complete quests and missions, participating in crits, sessions providing constructive feedback on peers' projects. While standardized test scores hover just above average, the school excels at collaborative competitions, preparing students for real-world workplace demands traditional education ignores. Julia Hu needed $5 million to bring her sleep-tracking wristband to market. Instead, Liam Casey's PCH International offered access to his entire supply chain. This capitalism without capital model required only ideas and marketing ability, no factories or warehouses. Within 6 months, her Lark wristband went from concept to Apple stores. This transformation made consumer electronics resemble software, where small teams drive innovation. When bringing ideas to market no longer threatens bankruptcy, the dynamic shifts from privileging safety to embracing risk. Google embodies this philosophy. Larry Page argued that incremental improvements eventually become obsolete. Organizations allowing risky projects foster greater creativity. China's Shenzhen demonstrates this through Shanzai, originally cheap knockoffs that evolved into quality products improving upon originals. Freed from patent restrictions, nimble manufacturers produce small batches with innovative features, gauge demand, then scale successful items. They captured 20% of the global cell phone market by introducing features like dual SIM cards before major brands. At the Media Lab, students build prototypes within hours thanks to advanced fabrication and open-source software that make trying cheaper than talking. The same philosophy behind Google's 20% time policy that generates valuable innovations. Charles Stein at DuPont funded pure science research despite its radical nature in the 1920s. Wallace Carothers pursued polymer research that led to nylon, even when management demanded commercial focus. At 3M, Dick Drew ignored orders to stop developing masking tape, secretly purchasing equipment in $99 increments to avoid approval requirements. His disobedience created Scotch tape and transformed 3M. Austin Hill dropped out in 10th grade and founded his first company at 16, a scam selling fake TV watching jobs that netted $100,000. After being confronted, he pivoted toward meaningful ventures, founding one of Montreal's first ISPs, then Zero Knowledge Systems. His product, Freedom, used cryptography to create secure, pseudonymous digital identities. After 9/11, the company removed Freedom's pseudonymous features to focus on corporate security. It had been ahead of its time. Hill later joined Blockstream, building sidechains onto Bitcoin's blockchain. The MIT Media Lab thrives on being disobedience robust, a quality essential for democracy and innovation. Nobel Prizes aren't won by following orders. There's a fine line between helpful and harmful disobedience, often clear only in retrospect. Organizations that punish all rule-breaking ensure their own obsolescence. In 2006, middle schoolers with no scientific training solved protein folding problems through Fold-It challenges that had stumped professional microbiologists for over a decade. This revealed a powerful truth: cognitive diversity outperforms concentrated expertise. Innocentive proves this at scale. The platform posts difficult scientific challenges to nearly 400,000 scientists from 200 countries. About 85% of these problems, ones that stumped experts at major companies, eventually get solved. Harvard research revealed the key. Solvers succeed when they have distance from field, less exposure to the discipline where the problem resides. Over 60% of successful solvers have advanced degrees, but nearly 40% don't, including a Canadian handyman who dropped out of graduate school. This contradicts our assumptions about expertise. Similarly trained experts share the same blind spots. The 1714 Longitude Prize was won by self-taught clockmaker John Harrison, not established scientists. Today's complex problems demand diverse perspectives, unconventional thinkers, and the humility to recognize that the best solution might come from the most unexpected source. At the World Economic Forum's Nerds Dinner, Ed Boyden declared, "My name is Ed Boyden. I'm solving the brain." This wasn't arrogance. It was a fundamentally different approach to impossibly complex problems. Boyden sees the brain as overlapping systems understood only through their interactions. His synthetic neurobiology group tackles 100 billion neurons with trillions of connections through a diverse team, former concert violinists, venture capitalists, literature scholars, college dropouts. His breakthrough, optogenetics, uses light-sensitive proteins to control individual neurons, revolutionizing neuroscience by allowing researchers to stimulate specific neural circuits rather than merely observe them. The Media Lab's Journal of Design and Science explores the white space between established disciplines. While funding concentrates around disciplinary dots, the white space offers less competition and greater breakthrough potential. Kevin Esfault exemplifies this as an evolutionary sculptor using CRISPR gene drive technology while considering the entire ecosystem, health systems, the biosphere, and society's capacity for such interventions. This participant designer mindset focuses on changing ourselves to change the world. We're replacing top-down knowledge transmission with active systems empowering self-directed discovery. In a rapidly changing world, learning by doing beats waiting for perfect understanding. The most dangerous position isn't at the edge, it's standing still while the ground shifts beneath your feet.